Hey, this is Dexter Sites.
My name's Caleb Wood.
My name is Billy McLaughlin.
And you're listening. You are listening to the Drum Report.
To the GoPro Drum Report.
To GoPro Drum Report.
On Verbmoto.
On Verbmoto.
On Verbmoto.
All right, guys, it's time for another episode of the Drum Report. Thank you guys so much for joining me on this episode. This is going to be an absolute banger. We got none other than Chad Reed in the house. They used to call him Skippy back in the day. That's a nickname that never really stuck with Chad, of course. He's from Down Under, but he never really had that same sort of Australian accent. His was always a bit different. Either way, love chatting with him. He's got some ideas on some stuff. He's a really cerebral guy, and he's been around long enough to know better. So I thought it was really cool to be able to chit-chat with him and sort of go through some things. I want to thank Racetech for supporting these podcasts. Same thing with Backyard Design, Fast Company, We Big Moto Co., as well as Moto Coding Company. If you happen to be framing your motorcycle, you want to have a brand new look, whether it's doing a set of triple clamps, or maybe you're doing the frame, or you're getting your hubs Cerakoted or something like that, Moto Coding Company, those are the guys to go to. RXR Protect, no better chest protectors under the sun than our friends over at RXR Protect. If you're not putting Heartbeat hot sauce on basically every breakfast, lunch, and dinner, what are you doing? Grow up. Luxon MX, best triple clamps on the planet, bar none. Go to the website, use Big MX Radio 2024 and save 10% off of your order. And WUSA, fantastic people over there. John Anderson, Christian Anderson, unbelievable people. And then you also have Guts Racing. Andy Grigg at Guts, I'm just going to go ahead and say that he is one of the most salt of the earth individuals in the entire sport. And if you don't support Guts, then I don't even know what we're talking about here. So let's get into the podcast. Let's talk to Chad Reed about some amateur racing here in the US of A. Welcome to another episode of the Grom Report here on the Verb Pod Network. I am your host, Brad Gebhardt, but this is a very special episode because you got not just one, not just two, but three Reeds on the line. We've got Tate Reed, we have Kaya Reed, as well as we have Chad Reed. Chad, how's it going?
We're good. How about you?
Yeah, we're doing fantastic over here, man. It's the Grom Report. We're talking about amateur moto, the rising stars, the future of the sport. And you've got basically a whole collection of them in your house. At one point you were in the shoes of these young ones. Where do we start with this conversation, man? I feel like we could go 10 different ways with this.
Exactly. I mean, it's kind of like, yeah, I mean, the biggest thing I would say is it's just coming full circle. And what I probably love most about the position and the full circle moment is, you know, you get to see it and take it on a little more. You know, I think that when you're young and you're so invested and, you know, just you're just kind of head down, bum up and just going for it, you know, and yeah. You kind of live and die by the sword. And for me, it's just, yeah, like older, smarter, take it on and just enjoy it differently than I did the first time around. It's really it's a fun process for me to, you know, watch the kids grow and learn and, you know, and the things that moto teaches you for life, I think.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Well, I hear she's pretty damn good at start. So why don't we just start off with the lady in question, Kaya Reed. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Awesome. I hear you got some motos in, maybe working on some starts this morning and putting in some seat time. Where were you riding today?
We rode at the Dade City, the farm.
Okay. That's a pretty popular spot. A lot of fast guys have spun some laps there. Guys like Tim Ferry, your old man, as well. Maybe not so fast, but very accomplished in his own right. Jason Thomas.
Yeah, definitely. The farm's a new place, actually. I don't believe JC, it's a little newer than that era, but
okay, he's been out of it for a while.
The ferries have spent a lot of time there. So Evan rode a lot there. So kind of new generation ferry, not so much old generation ferry, but it is. It's a new place. It's actually a place that we moved away from Florida for 4 years, and it's a new place, so it's really, they do a great job, and you know, track's a lot of fun. So yeah, we had fun today. Sis was hitting some big jumps, so
yeah,
we call her the starter, but now she's starting to get over her fear for jumping, and mm-hmm. it's just unlocked a whole new level and you know, challenge and I think fun for her.
Yeah.
What do you think, sis?
Yeah, jumping's fun.
Yeah.
I enjoy it.
Absolutely. Kaya, is that something that you see, obviously, your brother Tate and obviously dad hitting some big jumps, and you just think to yourself, yeah, I want to do that one day. I want to be flying in tight formation with the rest of the Reeds.
Yeah, definitely.
That's awesome. So you've been taking racing a whole lot more seriously just in the last maybe 2 years than you did prior to that. What are some of the things that you like to work on?
Corner speed and, like, yeah, my jumping and then starts.
Absolutely, yeah. Put it all together and, start getting some better results and getting your feet wet in some of the women's classes and the girls' classes. And you race with the boys sometimes too, do you not?
Yeah, I do.
Fair enough. Do you ever look at, like, your results compared to how your brother used to do in those classes and be like, see, I'm pretty fast?
Yeah.
That's awesome. And Tate, you've been making your own way, man. There's a lot to be said about a young man who sort of follows in the footsteps of their dad, especially as accomplished as your dad is. Obviously, it comes with that name comes with a lot of weight, but it also comes with a lot of confidence. Yes, no?
Yeah, sometimes it's a bit heavy on your back of your jersey having the Reed last name. Uh-huh. So, but other than that, for how good he was, he helps me a lot, so then I can become a better rider every day. Riding with him is pretty tough because he's really damn good, so it's really fun.
No doubt, man. I'm sure that's something that can put some pressure on you as well as put some wind in your sails. I'll put it to you this way. I don't know. I'm sure I'm probably the only hockey fan on the line, but Wayne Gretzky is the best hockey player that ever lived, and his son never honestly even played the game, didn't even venture into that world. So, honestly, I give a huge hats off to you for approaching this world and putting your feet like on, this landscape, because it's not easy at all. There's a lot of pressure to be able to uphold, the dominance and the tradition that your dad created of just being someone who puts in the work week after week, year after year. But obviously you don't shy away from that. You put yourself out there, you lay it out on the line, and you yourself have been making huge gains, man. I saw some footage, from Spring-a-Ding, and it's basically night and day. Chad, you can talk about this a little bit, just how much these kids have progressed in the last, say, 18 months. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty crazy. Like, I mean, when you keep it in context, it's impressive because, you know, we started, you know, COVID happened. I retired.
Right.
We sold everything to do with Moto. And we were kind of going to retire and figure out what life looked like post, you know, post professional racing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and during that period, obviously, the pandemic happened and, you know, a lot of their stick and ball sports that they're into, you know, they're in private school, all of that kind of shut down. And in my opinion, was just a blessing for us as a family, just because we got to, you know, get outside, you know, the craziness of what a professional career, you know, coming to an end like that. It just, you know, the world was a little weird and a little crazy. And so we just kind of, you know, knuckled down and had fun as a family. We picked up BMX riding. And then so for about 12 months, we raced BMX, and the kids started at the bottom in novice, and, you know, Tate and Kaya both won their way up to, expert, pace, made it to intermediate.
Nice.
And I think that skill set really transitioned over into motorcycle riding, you know. Then we started riding motorcycles. You know, we were based in the Charlotte, North Carolina area. We purchased some property with some partners and ran a place called Moto 40. Kids rode dirt bikes, and then suddenly, you know, turning a throttle and doing the moto thing was kind of the priority over the BMX side of it. And so then we started transitioning to that. And so I would say 2022, we kind of went all in. I took him to a lot of races. Or I should say Ellie and I took him to a lot of races. And we really just threw him in the deep end. So when you think of, you know, BMX racing, you know, the end of 2020 into 2021, that transition into motorcycle riding at 22. And then for the most part, the whole year of actually, I'll back up a little bit. And mm-hmm. So at the end of 22, the kids, we didn't break them. You know, we kind of took them to all the gnarly races. We took them to regionals. We took them to, you know, all the things. And in my opinion, they weren't ready for that. But I wanted them to see what the sport of motocross was like. And,
yep. And
you know, and Tate and Kaya more than Pace. Pace kind of, you know, just doesn't have the burning desire to want to do the things that these two want to do. Mm-hmm. And they kind of put their hands up and said, like, we want to continue this. We want to chase this dream a little bit. Like, we really enjoy it. Kaya loved it. Tate loved it. And so then I got hurt at the end of 22. We spent 4 months in Australia.
Oh, that's right.
And then so kind of during that process, we had sold up in, you know, Ellie and I had made the decision that the kids were committed to this. And so we were basically resetting, reconfiguring and restarting over, like, our life, you know, like post retirement and me getting hurt. We sold everything in North Carolina. We were moving back to Florida. And so we didn't really get settled until like June. I think we moved into we got the keys to the new house in Florida in like the 1st of June, 2023. So basically 23, we really didn't do any racing. We did a couple of local races towards the end. So when you think full beginners jumped in the, actually, whatever's deeper than deep end.
Yeah.
You know, they jumped in the gauntlet in 22. They basically, we worked on just a little bit of riding and more fundamentals in 2023 while we transitioned into a kind of a new sustainable lifestyle. And then 24, we've made big plans. We did our first series. We did the winner series at the beginning of the year. And that was a lot of fun. Tate won some classes. Kaya won some girls' classes.
Nice.
But they got just a lot of gate drops. And we're kind of just chasing the dream, you know? Like, I don't like it to use it like that because I think sometimes chasing the dream these days is a little more committed than I think you need to be when you're selling up everything you have and living out of a van or a motorhome and trying to do it that way. I think that's excessive.
Right.
You know, I grew up in a very, I would say, poor family. You know, like, we were not fortunate. You know, mom and dad both worked. We rode dirt bikes maybe once or twice. Maybe once or twice a week. And then we just raced on the weekends. We just
yep.
did nothing but racing. So for me, it's what can I learn as a person of 37 years of experience and, you know, obviously, what, 22 of those at a professional level. You know, what can I take from what I see, what I've learned, and try to find a happy medium. And that's honestly the goal is I don't want to go crazy and do some of the things that I see the sport doing. I just think it's really unsustainable and not the correct way.
Yep.
And then I see things that we did as a kid, you know, people, closer to my era, you know, the Carmichaels, the Stewarts, you know, those particular people. We got to spend what, 8 weeks around Big James.
That's cool.
We rented we kind of paid Big James to, you know, do supercross, and he prepped the track and watered it, and we showed up, you know, 3 to 4 days a week, and I got to spend, you know, 4 days a week around Big James, and I can honestly say it was so awesome. Like, just a reminder of, you know, I lost my dad last year, and it just brought back so many memories mm-hmm. of, like, my dad, you know, for good
yeah.
or bad. it's old school way of thinking, and I just, it's, you know, his mindset and his ideas are very kind of close to the heart, relatable, and we're close to what my family, you know, goals and ethics were, and so just, yeah, no, unique moment, so... I just think that what impresses me most is that, yes, they bear the name on the back of their jersey with a 22 on it. Mm-hmm. But I think that they're, you know, that'll never go away. And I tell them that daily, you know, like that weight is only for you to take on if you choose to take that on, you
right.
know, you will always be prepared, you know, compared to me. You know, people will always, talk good and bad about you. You know, the name will bring you negatives and positives. Like that is how it is. This is a life that you're choosing, and you're going down a path that dad's already been down.
Yeah.
And so for me and Ellie, it's our way to, you know, it's our job as a parent, as parents, to navigate that the best we possibly can. You know, but you see a lot of people, you know, the Evitts family, I think have been the most successful, you know, with Harry winning and then Stefan's success. And now we're seeing, you know, a third generation of Liam coming along and,
right.
and having, you know, having the beginning of that success. So it can be done, but it's rare. I think it's rare because, you know, athletes and sports people outside of our sports, you know, just athletes in general, it is such a massive, massive commitment. And sometimes, you know, I think as the athlete, it's hard to want to see your family go through that or your kids go through that. But I also think that this sport, I'm crazy in a way in the fact that I just love it. I love being around it. And so if they choose to be here and do this, then they have my 100% support, you know? And
yep.
I think that they feel that, they know that. You know, the biggest things that we work on right now is not, it's not winning, you know. Winning is always the goal and the priority. But I believe that where we're at right now, it's fundamentals. You know, not jumping any just major obstacle transitions, you know, learning curves, all those, you know, like let's tick the boxes, because in Tate's case, you know, him being the oldest, he's 2 to 2.5, 3 years out from potentially taking on pro racing.
Right.
You know, so you can't skip anything along the way. You know, there's no shortcuts in life. There's no shortcuts in athletics. And there sure as hell ain't shortcuts in moto. I promise you. So,
no, I totally understand that.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a steep mountain to climb. And I guess that question goes to both Tate and Kaya. I guess we'll go with Tate first. Is what was it that made you want to sort of dive in with both feet, man? Like this is the first time I ever saw you on a dirt bike was opening ceremonies, Anaheim 1, 2014. We're 10 years later from that, and you're ripping now. But it's taken a while for you to sort of like dive in with both feet. I don't know to use that term until I'm blue in the face, but you've really committed to this, Kaya as well. What triggered that? What said like this is a big challenge, and I do want to take it on?
Well, it started up by we were driving to a BMX race, and then I started thinking, is this really what I want? And then I kind of was thinking about moto because I knew that my dad did it after doing a couple of BMX races. And then it was sometimes a little bit about the money too. So like the BMX thing was, it was not get me like to be some like million or something like that. But that was one thing. And then I started doing it, and then I started like, oh, this is really like fun, like doing all the big jumps and like the way the bike sounds. And then now I just really wanted to be, I just really want to be a good pro rider and try and beat some of my dad's records and something like that. Just because I've always looked up to him, and I've always said I want to be better than him in anything that he does. So I'm living up to that, and I got to work really hard. So that's my goal.
Fair enough. So, like, is the I guess
he's,
the first
he's teenage. His teenage flow's coming, right? He's starting to just trying to flex on dad.
No kidding. I think the first one you're gonna have to knock down, dude, is rookie season in the 250 class. Almost get a perfect season. Sound good?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's gonna be tough, but
on a carbureted 250, yeah. you got to build up one of those things and make it sweet and actually ride one of those things, Chad. But what about Kyle?
I have my championship.
I know you have. And, would you ride it though?
It's collecting dust. One day I'll clean it up and kind of redo it and fire it up and stuff. It'll be cool.
And it would backfire on you just like my carbureted four strokes do. What about Kaya? What drives you, girl?
Yeah, like seeing Dad riding and stuff and like how cool it was. I like the sound, like Tate said.
Nice.
And like all that, like seeing him fly through the air was super cool to me. And like rail the corners, all that. And BMX just, it wasn't really what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
So, yeah.
So do you look up to some young ladies that race, like Kylie Stallings or Sophia Phelps or Maya Herrick?
Yeah. Mayla's, I look up to her. She's pretty quick and, she rips. And then Lachlan.
Yeah, Lachlan
she's
Turner.
She's really fast. And I like that she races with the boys, beats up on the boys.
Yeah, I think you'll probably do a fair bit of that yourself. So, Chad, what's the approach as far as, like, tutelage and seat time? And, like, there's a whole different approach to it. I think you're a pretty hard-headed guy. I think that's actually, honestly, that's what's needed to be successful in sport in general, not just moto. But at the same time, not everyone responds to like that sort of tough love or that sort of way of approaching things. What's your approach and how do you sort of balance that?
Yeah, I would say that tough love is something that's kind of ingrained in you. You know, like I wouldn't, I loved my childhood and I wouldn't change it for the world. But to be honest, that's just not the generation or the world we live in anymore. And so you sometimes have to check yourself and, you have to take a deep breath. Sometimes, your go-to wording or, sometimes you just want to freak out and say it however it comes out. But then that's why you have a wife that's also been around it for 20 plus years and, sometimes has a better way of doing it. And sometimes just take a breath, let her speak, and then I'll come in with some meaningful information. But for the most part, like, we really haven't gotten to that level. My expectation is do it right or don't do it at all.
Yep.
And so with that said, I push really hard on, it's not about like, hey, I wanted you to be top five and you were seventh. For me, it's about, and I think the kids will echo this or at least acknowledge that I've never been mad that they didn't win or they didn't get top five. I was only disappointed because they didn't do what I think is their best.
Yep.
When I see them work hard and when I see them work on fundamentals and then we go to races and then the fundamentals go away and the performance is less than what I believe is their best. That's what I have a problem with. That's what I try to correct. We're honestly not, and it's crazy because you say it and I have to check myself because I'm not wired that way. I was very fortunate to be, from 3.5 years old, I was kind of the one percenters, I won a lot. I won all the time, as a kid. But I don't think that, what I see in both of these two children is enough for me to put the effort in. I think Tate has what it takes to be good in his group and Kaya, especially over the last month and a half, has just come really far with her jumping and putting her riding together. So that's what drives it for me is everybody's on their own path. Just because I did it when I was 3.5 years old, I don't think that they necessarily are missing out. When I watch, there's some very, very talented, really fast kids. But fundamentally, there's a lot missing sometimes.
Right.
And they do it because they've been doing it for a long time. And some of that, knowing and having the knowledge of what happens down the road, sometimes that's the goal, right? Like for me, showing up to Loretta Lynn's in 2024 and claiming we were a mini senior or super mini or girls champion, is far less, enticing to me than, rolling into, a professional career for each at some point, if that's what they choose to do, mm-hmm. and being successful, because that's when it's real, you know. Like, again, I didn't pay enough attention, but I listen and I get caught up on it. But there's so many people. I mean, look at Jeremy McGrath. It's not like we never talk about his lists of amateur career highlights,
there's
right?
There's nothing to talk because about.
Because there's nothing to talk about. And yet he's the greatest. He's the king of Supercross. Like, I mean, we have a rookie that's showing a lot of promise and one day may prove us all wrong, and he might go on and do things that Ricky, myself, and James and Eli have not been able to do. But right now, 72, that is a very big number.
It's insane. It's 10 years at minimum, seven races a year.
Yes, yes. And honestly, when you say that, that's not a lot.
It's under half the races, yeah.
You know, like, that number doesn't, like, it's not a scary number to me. When I think, 10 years, seven races, as a retired guy, I'm like,
seven
that's
races.
Actually not, that's not that hard. But yet, I didn't achieve it.
Yep.
The greatest of all time didn't achieve it. You know, the fastest man on the planet didn't achieve it.
Yep.
You know, Eli, who's won more races than he has titles to show for it, and he didn't achieve it. And it's a number, and something happens. I don't know the answer to that, because I obviously didn't get to correct it or get to the seven, but there's a hot patch that race wins come and it all feels easy, but it slows down overnight and it stops overnight, and that's crazy, actually. When you really put it that way, it's pretty bizarre.
Yeah, it's just that being that consistent for that long. Tate, when it comes to forming good habits and knowing what you need to be able to do to consistently, like, incrementally make those improvements to get to the next level, like, what can your dad do, or what has your dad done to sort of help you sort of cultivate some of those that grit and determination and the good habits that are necessary to continue to progress?
I've kind of had to work for it by myself. He's always been
kind
of letting me figure it out on my own. But other than that, he helps a lot when I'm on the bike and off the bike. We haven't really done much off the bike, but we're starting to get into it. Like, well, my biggest issue is I need to be more flexible on the bike so I can get my style back and kind of move around with the bike, kind of how Jet does it. So we're starting to stretch a lot more now, so.
I saw some dance moves the other day. Chad, you want to get into that at all? Or Tate, let's talk about dance moves.
I would just add to what Tate said and in answering your question a little bit, is that it's, so many people get caught up in the repetitive moto riding. And as much as I agree to disagree on it, I do believe that it's repetitive. It is a repetitive sport. But the volume of what I see it done at, I think, is on the extremely high level. We're living in an era where people are just copy and pasting from a said Alden Baker training program of Ricky Carmichael in the early 2000s to, rolling over into the James Stewart, Ryan Villopoto, Ryan Dungey. Very few people know what that's like. I think that, and so now we're just come to a point where we're just, this is what you've heard 10 years ago, and that's the magic number of what you got to do. And so for us, I think it's more, and to highlight what you were bringing up on the, a YouTube video for us on 22 TV,
right.
Is the movement on the bike. You can achieve, in my opinion, more working with a rider with the engine off and the bike on the stand sometimes than you can by doing repetitive you know, moto after moto after moto, day after day.
Right, like them doing the wrong technique in a corner 1,000 feet away from you doesn't help.
Yeah, and I've always had that mindset and I've always had that thought, but I was reminded even more so, you know, this episode only just came out, but it was only a week ago that it happened. We were just at the track and I'm just like, you know, and I think the one thing that you need to add is so many people, you know, right now we're highlighting Jet Lawrence, right? Like all the, you know, we have, you know, James is obviously a very, you know, skilled and smart rider. And so he brings up certain things that James does. And,
right.
And now it's kind of like we don't talk about how fast people are now. Now Jet does it. You know, he masks the fastness. Obviously he's going faster than anyone.
Right. He doesn't look like it though.
But he doesn't look Eli, Ricky, James fast, right? Like he does it smooth. So now we're not talking about fast because it's not a visual thing. Now we're talking about the technique, and the technique is the fix to everything. And
right.
My opinion of that is that, you know, you can work on that, and I do believe that Jet has phenomenal and very perfect you know, most times you know, skill and technique, but you can't push it all the time. You know, it has to be also real. I think it also has to be you know, feel like it's like your normal. It has to feel like you can do it without thinking about doing it. And what I notice is Pate has always been quite a small child. And then the last kind of year he's really shot up. And so he's gone from being, you know, kind of petite and small, and now he's all lanky and, you know, and he's going through that phase where they don't know what to do with their legs and their knees and their
like
ankles and elbows. And he's like a giraffe. He's like, well, literally he's like a baby giraffe where sometimes like he trips over his own limbs. And it's actually quite funny. And so, you know, it's difficult to push during those growth periods. You know, Tate's on an 85, obviously, and I put him on my 125. And immediately he rides how I would like him to ride because the bike, you know, allows that. You know, the bike being smaller on the 85.
Right.
You know,
longer wheelbase.
He just starts to become baby giraffe real quick. So, it's just funny. You know, there's so many things to take into it. And I don't really believe that there's a one-size-fits-all, you know, kind of getting off a tangent here on technique and whatever. But, like,
right.
Ricky always talks about, like, and again, he used it to his advantage in this is just my personal opinion.
Of course.
He always used it to his advantage that, you know, that Kevin Windham was so talented and he was not talented. He just worked hard. I couldn't disagree with that more.
100%.
Because fundamentally, I don't know that I've seen anyone better than Ricky Carmichael. You know, I mean, did he stand and, you know, was he in a position or whatever? I think if you break it down and you go and take all pictures of it, the guy was pretty damn perfect. You know, how he got in and out of turns, him being smaller in stature, he never got things caught up. Like, I mean, following him through ruts was impossible at times just because he'd never get caught up. His legs would never drag. If they did drag, it was just seemed like it was like half the drag as what I would have, and I'm not even tall.
Yeah.
You know? And then you add a guy like Kevin Windham, who's a little taller than both of us. You know, then
he's got to have his leg up by the shroud.
I kind of have a different opinion of that. I think that Ricky always just used that to, you know, to his own advantage and to take a dig and beat up on other guys. I just think that, you know, like as a dad, like I would love my kids to watch Ricky and watch what Ricky did and how he came and entered into turns. Yes, you have to pay attention to Jet Lawrence because Jet does it in a slower, and so the naked eye, and I don't mean slower, obviously he goes very fast, but meaning he does it where the naked eye can see how nice it is, right? Where Ricky did it so ridiculously fast in a different way that the naked eye doesn't pick up on the little things that he does so good. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, just little things like that. We watch a lot of current and old stuff, and I love that. And I've always told these guys, until they pick up their iPads and they watch and study old races, new races, you know, current races, all these things, you won't be anything, you know. Like, I just don't believe, and I tell Tate and Kaya both this, after your races and when it makes sense, if you're not on that fence watching the fast kids that are not, that you're not actually racing, then I don't believe you belong here. I don't believe that you'll ever get better, because you have to watch. You have to take on what everybody else is doing and how they're doing it, because they're getting to a point where they're good enough to see the good and the bad.
Right, absolutely. And I think that there's no one way to be successful in this sport. It's been proven time and time again. Jeremy McGrath, very more methodical, very, very smooth, more upright, whereas Ricky Carmichael, more crouched, smaller athlete, like all intensity, and like you said, a ton of skill. There's some video, and I should send it to you, of Carmichael going in and out of corners at his house back in the day, and like, he's last on the brakes, he's first on the gas, and you can't say that there's not a lot of great talent out there. And then you did it differently than James did, and you guys literally went head to head, lap for lap. Like, there's a ton to be learned out there.
You see that it's so hard to repeat that, right?
Like, of course.
There's no said program that works for everyone. I mean, look at Ricky. He clearly, you know, was pushed very hard with his mom. Mm-hmm. His mom still continues to work with many people, in particular, all the star guys.
Yeah.
And we're not seeing Ricky Carmichael's, you know, developed out of that program. And you know, she's doing all the same things.
Yeah.
You know, she pushes on the stopwatch. She pushes on the turns and the turn track and all those things, you know? So I think that I've always been a believer that champions are born, not built. And so I think that you have to be born with something inside of you. And that's why I come back to what I said. I'm not worried about these two, you know, children, you know, chasing a sport that you start so young, because I believe that there is something that they are born with. You know, they have the gene, you know, it's in there. How they activate that and how they find that and how they find their own work ethic is yet to be seen, and we'll find it if that's what they want to do. But I believe that we're not late to the party and missing anything, I don't think.
No, certainly not. And like, as far as time goes, like, Tate is just kind of dabbling with the 125, is currently on the super minis and the 85s. The way I sort of see it is he's got 24 to 36 months, which sounds like a long time, but also doesn't sound like a long time, to continue to develop. And it starts with day one. It starts with doing the right things consistently, varying things up, taking from different places to get to make those 1% incremental improvements day after day, month after month. But he's got a lot of time to be able to put himself in a good position. And he's got some great support, not only with you and the family, but also like Alpine Star's been on board, Oakley's on board. You got great bikes with the Austrian manufacturers, KTM's great bikes. Tate, you got to be pretty excited about that, man. Like having the good support and knowing that, yeah, your dad might know a thing or two, even if you don't want to listen to him all the time.
Yeah, sometimes I always listen to him. Sometimes I don't, because sometimes it was like I always think I could do it myself, but then go on the track and don't, and then I come back in the thing and I said, "What do I need to do better?" So, but having Alpine Star, Oakley, Mountain, all those people helping me, it's been really awesome. Because I've always like looked at Eli and like, "Oh, that gear's really sick," even when he was first on Alpine Star.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I love everyone that's been supporting me. So it's been really big.
Fair enough. And for Kaya, like, do you think you have better style on the bike, both gear and riding style, or does Tate still have an edge on you there?
Yeah, I've been trying to work on my style. Yeah, Tate, I like Tate's style. But, yeah, I've been trying to get my style pretty good. I've been watching Jet and, like, a lot of the top guys and trying to get a good style down. But, yeah, they still got an edge on me on the style fit.
Fair enough.
We're working.
Even baby draft tape?
Yeah.
That's all right. I was a baby draft myself one time. I'll send you a picture, Chad. My last year on 80s, I was 5'10".
That's funny.
Which is,
yeah. And I guess, like, almost, just to echo what they just said, you know, with the support crew that we have, with all the people that we just mentioned, and just
Ellie.
Obviously my back, you know, and my background with what we know and with Ellie's support, we don't fit into the system, you know, like I'm not chasing, and people don't necessarily, and I shouldn't say people in general, higher up people, and they take way too much offense to it than they really should. But, you know, when I say, oh, Loretta Lynn's doesn't matter to me, it's not that it doesn't matter. It's just not on the radar today, you know?
Right.
It's not about chasing, like what I see, and it really drives me crazy, and I think it really hurts our sport, is that let's say that everyone rolls around, you know, from January through August. They'll ride, you know, if they're set age, they'll ride around on big wheel 85s and everything like that, or they ride 65s. And then suddenly when it becomes August, whatever it takes to step back, whether you're stepping from 85, small wheel 85 back to 65, or you're going from, you ride your super mini all year, but now they've got a mini senior class that's big wheel. And so we're going to go back to that. It literally means like whatever you can do to step down and back and flex on smaller people or, you know, just have it. It just, we've created that system. And for me, it's about development, rider skill, rider technique. And so we talk about it and joke about the baby giraffe, but, you know, when Tate, and he's getting there, when Tate looks too big on an 85, the 85's gone.
Yeah. No,
like, we're not chasing, you know, just because he's age and he's level and all that says that we should be mini senior and super mini. Like, soon as I'm like, nope, that's it, we're moving up, because you have to keep that progression. When the progression is as steep as it is for us, you got to continue to go, you know, and don't slow down. Don't, you know, don't be afraid of, you know, like at this point we've made the commitment, so we're all in. And so for me, it's just don't fall into the system and just keep going and doing what we're doing and stay in our own lane. So yeah, we're already starting to, like you said, you know, Tate rides the 125 every once in a while. And, every time I watch him ride it, he does some really nice things on it. And I'm like, damn, like we're close, you know? And that's what's hard is like, what, we're at the end of April and,
yep.
or, you know, kind of mid to end of April. And it's really hard because like we're doing qualifiers and everything right now, but we're still got May, June, and July, and then August. Like, we're still got 4 months until we actually
do that. Yeah, he's got 16 weeks before he's got to be on a
said race.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and so this said race, we're kind of setting, you know, we're having to make choices that are right today, but in 4 months, so much can change. 4 months ago, we were working on so many different things compared to what we're working on today, like the advancement that we've done in 4 months. And that's what I tell these kids. You qualify for Loretta Lynn's, and I promise you in 4 months, if we commit and you're committed as much as I'm committed, then we could be competitive there. But first, the hard thing is actually making it, you know, because that's the toughest part. So it is, it's a weird system that I didn't grow up with. And it's just something that I notice different because it is different from my upbringing. Doesn't need to be a good or a bad, and it doesn't mean that top people of our sport need to be mad at me because I don't, you know, get on my hands and knees and, you know, pray to the LL gods. But I think it's just another event. It's a one single standalone event that's amazingly cool to see, you know, from all the races that I've seen. I think, damn, these kids are so fortunate and so lucky. But I don't know that the emphasis needs to be as high as it is.
Yeah, well, it is. I think it's a significant race. It holds a lot of weight in the minds and hearts of a lot of people.
40 plus years. I mean, it's
43 years this year.
Damn, really cool, right? Like, I mean, that's older than me. 1 year older than me. They started in 81. Like, that's cool. Like,
for sure.
That's why, you know, like, you can't lose sight of what the race means. But you also have to stay committed that it's a 12-month period of racing, not a one weekend event.
Absolutely. Like, the fact that, like, the idea that race can sort of make or break your season is a little bit maybe, like, overhyped in the fact that, there's some kids that just, like, put a wheel wrong or they dislocate their shoulder or tweak a wrist, and all of a sudden, like, all the results from that week are just, like, I don't think everyone's looking at just those results. Like, if you went to Spring-a-Ding and went all three motos winning, like, that's also very impressive, because if you look at the roster, if you have kids show up to that race, there's some heavy hitters there as well. Or whether it's World Mini is starting to develop more of a following with more kids coming out. Obviously, what Loretta's does is, like, the whole industry shows up, for one. And it's the ultimate clash of clans as far as, like, the East Coast kids and the West Coast kids and even some international kids. Like, was there ever a time when you were on mini bikes that it was even thought of that you would come over, or even, like kind of like that tampered with the idea, or were you just over in Australia beating up on fools?
No, I obviously always wanted to come to America. That was my only goal.
Cool.
You know, I was Kaya's age when I really started to pay attention to, you know, the McGrath era and so I have a cousin that's 5 years older than me, and he was really fortunate to have some people that backed him. And I want to say it was 91 or 92. I want to say 91. And so I think in 91, they actually, I think if you look up in the archives, they ran an international class at Loretta Lynn. So it was like one of those classes that you didn't have to qualify for. You know, and back in those days, and again, I didn't get to live it, but back in those days, just because I paid so much attention, and my cousin did it, is they did Ponca, I think 2 weeks before. And so it was really cool for, like, what I would call the international kids to come and do Ponca, which was, you know, huge event, and then basically roll straight from there into a Loretta's. And then they had the international class, and my cousin won the international class, I think in 91 or 92, you know, race with Kevin Windham and, you know, those guys. So he was more Kevin's age. And so, yeah. And I think Robbie Renard, those guys. And so anyway, just always wanted to do it, but for whatever reason, the family didn't have the funds, and you know, that my opportunity to come here as a kid, just wasn't possible.
Craig Anderson, 1992, 1-1-1. I was on a Kawasaki, beating RC Bennett, Sean Ward, Sean Schwartz. Who else is in this class? Simon Cotter's in there from Ireland. Yeah, there is an absolute. And also, do you know Jamie? Obviously, it would be Jamie and Tiffany Greenwood. They're from Australia as well.
So that's who Craig was supported by at the time. Okay. Was the Greenwood family.
Interesting.
You know, they were super. Tiffany. It was a, you know, his sister, and actually, I want to say that they were twins.
They must be very close in age. And actually, Tiffany was the more consistent of the two. She went 7-7-7.
Dude, so Tiffany used to rip. She used to really rip. She was awesome. And so growing up in Australia, we used to do flat track as well.
Okay.
So basically,
TT style stuff.
You know, like on the, yeah, kind of like more TT style. So like left and right, front brake, not circle, never circle stuff. Yeah. Circle stuff was more what we would call speedway stuff.
Okay.
Not so much. So more like TT. Like we used to do, you know, short track, long track. And so I have a couple of short track, long track, flat track titles as a kid. But it, you know, it taught you speed. It caught, you know, shifting through the gears. It, you know, it was slippery. Back in those days, we used to have these tracks that were kind of like oiled, so you kind of had to run a special tire and everything like that. And so they were really hard to get used to. I remember eating, oh man, just massive front end washouts because I was so used to just, you know, moto style and getting aggressive on the front brake and, you know, coming wide open in, starting to back it in, and then grab some front brake and lose the front and eat crap. So,
yeah, just face plant.
I have videos. I wish that we, you know, I wish we had iPhones back then, just because of the moments and the, you know, the lifestyle that we lived, and it would be cool to show your kids. You know, some of the stuff that you did and how, you know, kind of just, it's funny, like, you know, like I got to where I got to by doing a, you know, such a different style of training and preparation to what I see today. You know, and it's just funny. So that's what gives me that open mind of like, okay, acknowledge and see what happens today and what everybody's doing. But also know that, you know, I grew up in a very different era and the things that we did and, you know, and then you take into like Jet and Hunter, you know, coming from Australia, going to Europe and spending many years in Europe, you know, and the skill set that they bring to the table. And it's kind of like, well, it's hard to deny that, you know, if you compare, and I've got a couple of kids wanting to do this sport, then I probably am going to go, well, I kind of want my kids to be like this, not like this. So,
right.
You know, it just allows me to have an open mind and, you know, look from all angles.
Fair enough. So before I let you go here on the Grom Report, a couple of things I wanted to ask you about is, like, I'm sure, Tate, when you roll to the line, there's a little bit of an intimidation factor. First of all, you're completely G'd up from the feet up with the latest and greatest from Alpine Star and Oakley. But also, you got the big 2-2 on there. Bike's always looking good. You're always looking good. Like, is there some kids that might be like, kind of like take a, like a double take? Like, holy crap, that's Tate Reed?
I'm kind of somewhat, yeah, my Reed last name, but those kids are really, really, really fast. So
fair enough.
I kind of sometimes look up at them sometimes and put them on a pedestal, but honestly.
I think it's probably easier for me to answer just because I think he's modest and, you know,
I think
that he's, you know, he's wired that way to, you know, be respectful, but there's a lot of fast kids. But I mean, personally, as a dad, you know, a lot of people, they all look at him, right?
You know,
I would say the top kids are not threatened yet. But I watch them pay attention. I watched 2 years ago, you know, you ask questions on bikes and setups and jetting, and then now the information's a little less. So
yeah,
a little less, for a dad that's been around this and made a living from this. I love that. I love that when high profile people start to be, a little closed and less willing to give up information. That means that they're watching and they see big progress. But yeah, I mean, it's for me, like, I think that there's a lot of very fast kids in each of the kids' classes, you know, and I think that that's what excites me as a dad is, when I look at the kids that are winning Tate's group, man, it's cool to know. And like, you know, like if you take the era of a Jason Anderson, Barsha, you know, Mookie, like those guys that have been racing each other since they were 10 years old, you know, if you fast forward 10 years down the road and you see the Carson Woods, the, you know, I hate saying names because then you always forget somebody and there's too many talented kids to, you know, to miss. So, but you look at the group and I feel proud that whether he makes it or not, it's a very talented little group that, you know, that like the level that he's having to ride at is high. And I respect that, you know, I think it's really cool. And so we're chasing those guys. But we also respect how badass they are and how cool and how much effort they put into it. And I feel really proud as a dad to think that, man, my kids are chasing this level and this level is really high. So yeah, but then, like I said, like so many kids and obviously the good kids, But a lot of the new kids and, you know, some of the slower kids, they all come up and love to get photos and see, you know, see us because of, you know, one, obviously because of who I was, but, you know, they genuinely are on the same path. You know, mm-hmm. some of the kids have been riding longer than my kids. Some of them started at the same time and they recognize, you know, the effort that we put into our YouTube and they see the ups and downs. And so I think just people appreciate the hustle.
Fair enough. Are there any moto dads that are intimidated by the tutu?
I don't know that are intimidated. I think that
shy to walk up.
I never feel intimidation. I always feel they always make me feel really kind of welcome and proud because, you know, when you look at the age group of, you know, like people my age having kids,
yeah.
most of my kids are in, you know, their parents are my age, right? And so I
right.
was kind of their era. And so whether I was their favorite or not their favorite, but thankfully a lot of them seem to have.
Did they tell you?
You know, a lot of them. Yeah, no, there's a lot of people like, hey, man, like you were my guy. And, you know, and then there's the opposite where, oh, man, I couldn't stand you, but what you're doing with your kids is cool. And for me, that's winning. You know, like I think that sports, you know, teams or athletes, you know, like I think that whoever they choose is who they choose. But, you know, getting respect for what I do as a dad in some ways is far more important than I ever achieved on a dirt bike. So I think that, you know, we're all on the starting line. It's not like I expect to be first gate pick because of who I am. You know, I fit into the line.
Yeah.
You know, we do all this, you know, I work on the bike. I start the bike. I warm the bike up. I clean the bike. I prep the gate, you know, just like they are. And I think at the end of the day, you know, I have a bunch of, you know, maybe my, you know, trophy room looks a little more decorated than theirs, but I'm just like them on the weekends today.
Nice.
And so I think that there's some mutual respect. And I think what I watch most, I get a kick out of it is, it was a mud moto at Springading and I took Kaya's bike and I put it onto the back of the wood. It was a great start. And I kind of like spun her tire to clean it up, you know, clear out the tire.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the dads must have wanted to do that, and the daughter didn't want to let him, because, you know. And then when I did it, he's like, "Thanks, maybe she'll do it now, you know, because you did it." And so it's kind of like sometimes they use me as an example.
Yeah,
because
you're the benchmark.
They say that they, you know, maybe they mention, "Hey, let's do this," and then the kid's like, "Ah, yeah, nah, whatever, dad," you know. But then I do it, and it's kind of like, "Well, he's doing it. Why would you know?" And it just. So
yeah.
I see that side of it, and I get a kick out of that, and it makes me real proud, I think, sometimes.
Fair enough. Well, before I let you go here, the last thing on the topic of proud, what is something that you see in both of your children, all three of your children, that just reminds you a little bit of yourself and Ellie? Like, all three of your kids are basically a combination of two very high-performing individuals. What are some things you see a little bit of yourself in either Tate or Kaya or Pace and be like, yep, that's me right there, and proud to see it?
I would say that talking about Tate and Kaya, both remind me of the grind and wanting to be better, you know? It's never always perfect. It's never easy, you know? Going back to my cousin being 5 years older than me, he was the best of the best, you know? He's one of the greatest of all time in Australia. Winning many races, many titles. And so, you know, when he's 5 years ahead of you, you kind of got to see the playbook, right? He wasn't my brother, but he was like my brother. You know, he was my best friend and like brother. I spent, you know, almost every day, every afternoon with him. I watched him when he went pro. And so for me, it was about watching that. And so I chased him, right? And so when I see, you know, teenage Tate, literally have tears because he can't beat me at something, like, that makes my heart so happy, because you have to have that kind of passion and
yeah.
that
fire
grind
needs to be there.
You know, and watching Kaya, you know, take some diggers on the jumps and you know, her fear for kind of the last kind of year and a half, And then recently, you know, starting to do the more technical jumps when they're ready, when they start getting kickers, and she still continues to do it. Her face when she comes in, like, she's, in all honesty, she probably has a more closer attitude to me than Tate does. You know, Tate has a blend of Ellie and I. Mm-hmm. Kaya has that, you know, shit face lips where she comes in, she's pissed off and literally wants to kill people.
Amazing.
that's a little bit more like the chip off the old block. You know, reminds me of myself. And so you kind of just look and I'm like, okay, I will give her 5 minutes, you know, or if she's doing something or she's mad about something, I also know that I can push the buttons. Right. And do some things because she's, again, sometimes you push buttons and they're the wrong buttons and you know, they're a little different, but for sure, it changes and they're all different and they all want different information. You know, Ellie's good at understanding when to step in and when to allow me to get in there. But yeah, I love it. I just see probably the biggest thing that I'm most proud about is just their drive to want to do it at a high level and they listen, you know. Most parents, I would say the most common thing is, oh, do they listen to you? And I can honestly say they do. You know, they seek my everything to it, you know, sometimes to a flaw where sometimes you just got to do what you think's best. You not just rely on what information I give them. And so it makes me real proud that they still listen to me. They take my information really, you know, to heart. And they work hard. They come off the track and they're mad and they want to be better the next time out. And that's all you can ask from a dad's standpoint.
Certainly. And probably best to listen to a few things that dad has to say because he did it pretty good. He did it pretty good for a long period of time. Chad, this has been an amazing hour. I really appreciate you taking some time. Honestly, could probably pick your brain about this sort of stuff for another hour or two, and we might just exactly do that somewhere down the line. I'm looking forward to seeing you guys in the future, whether it's at Hurricane Mills or an amateur race somewhere along the way. Get those gate drops, continue to work, and Tate and Kaya, thank you guys so much for making time for the Burb Pod Network and the Grom Report.
Hey, thank you. Appreciate you.
Thanks. Awesome, guys. Don't hang up just yet. For podcast sake, we're going to cut things off right there.
kids up to grown man. Walk through the gates of the coal miner's daughter to make a point clearer than the creek water. Who's the best? Who's it gonna be? In Hurricane Mills, Tennessee. Can you feel the adrenaline? Dirt flies hypnotized by the wheel spin. Hear the crowd, everybody's whistling. Line on the bell. If you can put it all together three times, this 1 week of racing could change your life. Everybody knows this is where it all begins. Do what you gotta do for 20 plus two out at the ranch. And rowdy fans play the national anthem and everybody stands. Smell the smoke from the two strokes riding by. The 30 second card's on its side.
It's time to get it.
Can you feel the adrenaline? Dirt flies hypnotized by the wheel spin. Hear the crowd, everybody's whistling. Line on the field. If you can put it all together three times, this 1 week of racing could change your life. Everybody knows this is where it all begins. Do what you gotta do for 20 plus two out at the ranch.